With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Cords untangled and make sure your TV is tuned to channel 3 because it's time for Fanfight VCR. I am Fanfight section head LB Hunktears, and I'm joined by my co-host Fanfight columnist and last time I said future cowboy hat owner. Are you a cowboy hat owner yet, Colette?
No, I'm not a cowboy hat owner yet, sadly.
It's okay. It's uncertain times.
It will happen. Yeah, these uncertain times call for I don't even know, fewer fashion risks.
Yeah, I guess. But this is Fanfight VCR, the brand new podcast, or one episode old podcast, where we watch old wrestling matches and pretend that we're sitting on the floor of a living room playing with tapes.
Who doesn't love playing with tapes?
I loved playing with tapes so much. I got into so much trouble for, like, the flappy part.
Oh, yeah.
Like, playing with the flappy part and then, like, turning the little white roundy things.
Yeah, those were the two actionable parts of the cassette tape.
Yeah, I mean, there's also, I guess, sometimes a label you could peel off.
True. Yeah, but you don't want to mix up your McDonald's copy of Charlotte's Web with your violent FMW death matches.
Yeah, you really don't. Unless, no. I'm trying to think of, like, the best tape mix up. Like, the most Southern California story of my life, I think, is I was in third grade and we were watching some PBS thing my teacher had taped off TV, and it suddenly, like, did the little fuzz thing and then launched into, like, halfway into the video for Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Most of the ones that I've heard, because I never had a mix-up. I didn't, you know, engage with people who were selling tapes or recording tapes. I just recorded my own tapes. But the best mix-ups that I've ever heard, and, like, this is apparently pretty common, is that, like, on those, like, four-hour-long VHS tapes, like, after the event or the compilation or whatever, like, a lot of times people would accidentally, quote-unquote, slip in, like, just full hardcore pornography. Which, you know.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
Yeah, not surprising at all. But it wasn't just, like, older dudes tape trading. So I think that maybe, like, Best of the Super Juniors was an awakening for some people that they were not expecting at the time.
Wow. That's wild. I mean, I guess that does make sense, but
you gotta use up that space.
Yeah. Guess so. Trying to think of, like, the people, like, like, the tape trading-y, like, old websites I've seen, and, like, that tracks.
Yeah.
Seem like the kind of people to do that shit.
Oh, for sure. Like, just a big list of things on a GeoCities site.
That's such a specific type of perversion.
GeoCities, right? Perversion or tape trading?
List perversion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People love lists.
Oh, I hate lists.
Oh, they love
them. I mean, I rely on lists.
Yeah.
I need them to live. But I don't like making them.
Yeah, I don't like making lists either. It tends to, like, I learn in making the list how little I know, and I don't like that. I like to be perceived as an expert.
Me too. I'm really not an expert, though, at, like, anything.
No, me neither.
Oh, fuck. Well, aren't you glad you're listening to this podcast?
Yeah, here we are.
Also, though, that's, like, very refreshing of us, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of self-proclaimed experts in this subculture.
Too many.
You want to know something I'm really not an expert on?
What's that?
What we watched today.
Yes.
This FMW Explosion Pool Deathmatch Complete Tape .mp4. I didn't watch the complete tape.
But... No, I didn't either. I got two different versions of it because I put out a call for this. It's a fairly infamous match. So I guess I should probably thank the people who gave us access to this tape.
Yeah.
It'd be Ed Blair and Words Big 80s, whose real name I don't know. It's shrouded in mystery.
Thank you to you two heroes.
Yeah, because this match, it rules. It's the best thing.
I needed this today.
Yeah, I did too.
So I think a lot of us right now aren't doing the best,
mm-mm,
psychologically or emotionally. So what I really did need to see was six men riding a boat to a wrestling ring in the middle of a giant swimming pool so that they could stab each other and have explosions and then splash in the water.
Yeah, that's all anyone really needs. And thankfully, you know, this is the kind of silliness. It's really weird to call a match that involves the prominent use of a sickle silliness, but I feel like this is the kind of silliness that people who love wrestling should get into. Like, there was a lot of things that I was considering sending your way, like grocery store death match, bathhouse death match, like all these weird things, but the visual of six men riding like a dinghy. It's not even really a boat. It's a dinghy. It's like a life raft.
Sorry, I don't know the boat
nomenclatures.
Technology.
Yeah, I really don't either. But it's a very small watercraft. And like seeing these dudes ride it out to the pool, like ride it through the pool to a ring that is floating on a giant floating platform. Very satisfying. Incredible.
And I'd seen, like, I guess there's, like, a highlights clip on YouTube that's, like, 5 minutes, not so much stabbing in it.
Yeah.
I think I, you know, was doing one of those, like, watch-alongs with, like, a bunch of people where I'm, like, kind of high and we're just, like, watching weird wrestling stuff. Like, the Star Wars, think of those, like, I don't know, whatever that fucking Star Wars match is.
Christmas
like,
Star in there. Wars? Oh, with the Great Sasuke?
Yeah.
Yeah, where, like, C-3PO... like hits someone with a chair and then dances around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like all those, all the hits.
Yeah. All of
playing the hits. So I hadn't seen like the whole thing or like didn't know or like really paid a ton of attention to it or like no context or yeah, anything. So it was fun to like see the match beforehand.
Yeah.
Which I guess ends in a no contest because of swimming interference.
No contest because of swimming. I don't know, like how much FMW have you watched?
Like almost none.
Okay. Yeah,
I've just seen the like basically like stuff I have maybe talked to you about or talked about publicly while we've known each other.
Yeah. I don't know, if you did watch the match beforehand, then you got, like, a little taste of, like, how dramatic Atsushi Onita is.
Yes.
Before he goes full-blown diva at the end. But yeah, I don't know, like, I skipped over that match because, I love Tarzan Goto, but, and he's probably someone we'll be talking about a little later, but I just wanted to get to like the meat of this, which is like,
of course, yeah,
this is like all time. Like, I can't say enough about the boat. Like, we were texting a little bit earlier and I called it, it was like Onita crossing the Delaware.
Which we need, I'm gonna look at the fan fight budget and just like see what I can do. I can like commission this.
Yeah. But like, The thing about that is like, as ridiculous as it sounds, it is more dramatic than every cool WrestleMania entrance I have ever seen.
He is like fully doing it.
Yeah, like
it's absolutely George Washington.
Yeah, and he has such command over the crowd too. Like, this was something that I talked about in the Terry Funk and Onita piece. But like, when he's on the boat, he points to the crowd like once, and the crowd goes fucking crazy. Like, they're so stoked.
They fucking love him. Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, that's it's like inspiring that he was able to pack all these people into this pool auditorium.
Yeah.
With the like 80s glass cubes.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he did like for a long time. This is a part of I think his like most famous feud with Mr. Pogo, who's the guy with the sickle. You know, it's not like it's well remembered because of like the setup and all that, and I actually think that this is like a really good match. But compared to like the kind of explosion death matches that they had under like regular circumstances, I feel like this is one of the lesser seen Onita Pogo things. So it's pretty cool that like this is maybe your introduction to Mr. Pogo.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen Mr. Pogo before.
Awesome. Yeah.
I feel like I would remember Mr. Pogo because I saw Mr. Pogo and was like, wow, if I really worked hard.
Yeah.
If I like put my all into it, I could have a build like Mr. Pogo.
And you know, we haven't said everyone's names that's in this match. So like before we actually dig into this, this is a 6-man tag team match that takes place in a no ropes exploding barbed wire exploding swimming pool double hell death match where the team of Atsushi Onita, Katsutoshi Niyama, and Mr. Ganosuke take on Mr. Pogo, the Gladiator Mike Awesome, and Hideki Osaka.
And it's pretty great. I was looking up all these guys, by the way.
Yeah.
Do you want to know how many people in this match have run for public office?
My guess. I mean, I know that Onita was a senator. That's one of the best things about him. But I'm going to guess like 3 people.
You are absolutely correct. It's 3 people. One half.
So
Onita was the only one who won.
Yeah.
Mr. Pogo ran for Senate.
Can
and
you
lost.
Imagine? Just him showing up to the Japanese diet in his face paint.
I am sad he lost.
Yeah.
I think he should have won. And Hideki Hosaka ran for city council and also lost.
Oh, well. I didn't know that about Hideki Osaka.
But Onita lived their political dreams, I guess, for them.
God. Onita, like, we won't get into it now, but highly encourage you to look into the details of his political career.
Incredible.
They're fascinating.
Very good stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude. This was like, I did a little bit of research, got immediately sidetracked by this, and did not look up anything else having to do with what this feud was about.
Yeah.
I think it's like, they were, the like, there's Team Onita is Team FMW, and then Mr. Pogo's team were from a different company that got, like, bought out?
I'm going to explain this poorly. There is, like, a pretty good, and by pretty good, I mean very good and very exhaustive podcast called The History of FMW that kind of goes into this. But the team, I don't know if at this point it's the Wing Army or not, but Wing was a different deathmatch promotion that at one point in time, Mr. Pogo left FMW to go to Wing for like a bigger contract and then came back to FMW once Wing closed down. That said, like, I don't know. Do you know anything about the Gladiator?
Yes. Okay. From the Wikipedia article that I skimmed about him.
Yeah.
And like I've seen his name around the Mike Awesome, not as the creator.
Yeah. Mike Awesome is probably what he's better known as in the States. Like he was a former ECW champion. There's a lot of controversy about that because he left the company with the title for, you know, a better contract than WCW. And when you turn your back on ECW, you're a wrestling pariah forever. Okay. Awesome, like, I mean, it's Mike Awesome's not a great wrestler, but he is a spectacle unto himself, and I love him, and it is unfortunate that the consequences of you know, a career of taking chair shots to the head is early death, but he's so great, and there's like hardly a hint of that greatness in here because he's not part of the story at all. But he becomes more important to FMW later on down the road.
Okay.
And then other than that, like the main players here are Onita and Mr. Pogo. So what did you think?
So there's like the moment of me like adjusting to the spectacle, kind of trying to figure out what's going on, like what everybody's dynamic is, what exactly the stipulation is, like how, what the like methods of elimination are.
Yeah.
And then like, okay, somebody gets thrown into the explodey part of the pool ring and then the bell rings. It's like, okay, that's one way to get eliminated.
Yeah.
Got it. And there's just like, I feel like there's nothing more satisfying on this earth than the feeling you get when somebody goes into the exploding barbed wire and it explodes.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
Like the brain juice I got from that was almost enough to like get me through my whole day.
Can I tell you the first thing that I thought about this match?
What?
When Mr. Pogo was riding on the dinghy to the pool, he was carrying a barbed wire baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
And what came to mind was the Jim Ross call from Terry Funk versus Ric Flair about how, like, despite the environment, you would think that they'd have a little bit of compassion. Because dude goes all in with the barbed wire bat, like, early.
He really
like, there's no tease. Like, Mr. Pogo just goes for it.
Well, he's pissed about something.
Yeah, he's super pissed. And he's wearing cargo pants, so, like...
Yeah, so you know it's real.
Yeah, he's not messing around. And I love, like, the early match thing where it's, like, you know that, like, the thing is, like, everyone wants to see Onita and Pogo fight, and, like, they're fighting over who's gonna fall into a pool. It's pretty amazing.
But I feel like this match gets... And I don't know if, or like what I really get out of this is the like wonderful violence of slapstick.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this is like, it's not a comedy match. It's not like a slapstick match because those exist and I love them. But like, there's something so, I guess like falling into the pool is such like a, you know, a classic, like old movie comedy gag.
Mm-hmm.
That for me it's just the like combination of that and like stabbing and bleeding and barbed wire and explosions is just like really good.
Yeah, I mean, I love too like the way that some of those dudes really went for it, like on the belly flop into the pool aspect.
Yeah.
Like Mike Awesome hits the pool so good. Like Onita kind of whiffs when he swings the bat at him, but it's like a double team attack or whatever. And like Awesome just, there's like a little like, you know, 2 or 3 foot long like platform outside of the ring, and Awesome like totally clears that and like just goes flying like almost into where the bombs are. It's so good. Like he's so great. He does a power bomb in this match too that is just completely ridiculous. Like somehow one of like the most violent things that happens in this match is his power bomb.
That's like one of the, that's early on, right?
Yeah, that's pretty early on.
Yeah, that was like, because there was like the period of adjustment, that power bomb was like one of the spots where I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I also like, I'm the here. Other thing that I love about Mike Awesome, because he's like, he's kind of not in it forever. Like he's not in the match the whole way.
No.
But I love that Mike Awesome, out of 6 people, he's the only guy like confident enough in his gym body to wrestle without wearing a t-shirt. It's yeah. So good. Like he's the only guy at the swimming pool who's not swimming with a shirt on.
I didn't even notice that.
I am everybody else. Maybe in that's that match,
like
though.
Maybe it was all the shirt. I felt like there's something about this that I felt great kinship for, and I think it was all the shirts at the swimming pool.
Yeah, no,
same here. I
think
that's
here.
What it was. Fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Pogo in a shirt at the swimming pool, I, like, really connected with on a deep level.
Yeah. Mr. Pogo in general is I think, a very identifiable person. I definitely dressed like Mr. Pogo, like, in middle school. just, like, dumb t-shirts, cargo shorts, probably. I dressed like John Cena in middle school. And like,
I mean,
Mr. Pogo,
you dress like a middle schooler in middle
yeah,
school.
Yeah, Mr. Pogo yeah. is like a nightmare middle schooler.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, he's like a bizarro universe John Cena. I love it.
Oh, that's so good. I feel like Mr. Pogo and I in middle school would have gotten along.
Yeah, he was probably a really chill middle schooler.
Or even just like this Mr. Pogo, but just in middle school, I feel like we would have been friends.
Yeah, as like a, what subject would Mr. Pogo teach?
Oh no, I meant he's an adult.
Oh.
He looks like that, but he's a student, and he's my friend.
I could see that. I think Mr. Pogo would teach shop, though.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
He knows his way around a blade. Which...
I think he's... Yeah.
Yeah.
He does fire breathing.
He does fire breathing.
That's pretty shop teacher. Or yeah. Venice Beach.
What did you think of his sickle?
Okay. You'd ask me, are you okay with sickles? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
But I forgot about it. So... I didn't know that. I forgot the sickle was coming. I was like, I think this gets pretty violent. I forgot how, though. And literally, like, here is my exact... Here's LB watching this happen. Yo, did Pogo just stab Onida with a sickle? You could just do anything in the 90s, I guess.
Yeah, it's like... It's so gross looking, but... Apparently it's completely safe. Like it's
how did he do it?
I have no idea.
He did it so good. Yeah. That was when I realized I couldn't actually be Mr. Pogo because I could never make it look so good to fit like stab somebody with a sickle and like grind in to their little tummy and make it look really scary, but like not kill them.
No, Mr. Pogo's like an expert at knife play, and I don't know how. Like, it's this weird magic trick where like, it looks like he has a sickle super deep into Onita's, like, stomach. Like, this dude's about to rip intestines out.
Yeah.
But no. Like, it's... Like, people are getting hit in the forehead. Like, it's like... If this dude sucked at hitting people with blades, like, it'd be a bad night. I don't know if it's, like... So, like, at my job, I sold a samurai sword this week.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's a TV prop. So, like, the blade is sharp, but not so sharp that if you touch it, you bleed. Like, it doesn't cut you unless you're, like, really hit someone with it.
Okay.
And, like, part of me wonders if, like, that's kind of the magic to it, is, like, it looks super real because it is real, but at the same time, like, it's not going to, like, really seriously fuck someone up. Like, it might be uncomfortable, but it's, like, it's a movie prop, essentially.
Right. That makes sense.
It might be the
but
best
still,
weapon.
Like, you have to have a certain amount of skill to, like, make it... Because you could still fuck somebody up with it.
Oh, yeah.
Just not super easily.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, I mean, like, it's one of those things, too, where, like, you always see, like, where Pogo is working the sickle. And it's, like, stomach, arm, forehead. Like, all places that bleed super, super easy. But, like... I think that the people who are getting hit with that still have to, like, gig.
Okay.
Which if you don't, like, if people don't know what the term gig means, that's essentially, like, making yourself bleed via use of, like, a sharp implement, like a razor blade. I guess I could have used the word blading, and that would have been just as descriptive.
We talked about it in regular fan fight number 2.
Awesome. Yeah.
Everyone. And also, if you don't know what that is, and you're listening to this episode about this match, well done.
Yeah. Thank you for being
great
here.
Job. You're getting into wrestling in a really good way.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, covering the ridiculous aspects of wrestling is, I think, just as important as the serious stuff.
For sure, yeah. There's a reason this we're doing this in episode 2 and not, I don't know, something I don't want to watch.
God, yeah. I like the other stuff that I kind of wrote about Mr. Pogo was like, essentially, he's like the wrestling version. Like, if Eli Roth movies didn't suck, like, it would be Mr. Pogo. Like, seriously, like, it's like, here's some, like, gruesome grindhouse murder man, but he's a professional wrestler, and if you, like, ran a couple laps around him, he'd be super winded, but he'd still fuck you up. Like, there's no escaping Mr. Pogo.
I think that's a good summary.
Yeah.
This match for me was just, like, the realization that, like, me identifying with Mr. Pogo and then me realizing I could never be Mr. Pogo. That was my journey here.
Yeah. That's many people's relationship with professional wrestlers, but you chose a fucked up one.
And this is who I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I still want to get the pogo bot, though. I think I could do it.
Yeah, I think so. God, we could spend all day talking about Mr. Pogo, because I love everything about him in this match. Like, I love that his cargo pants are violent. Like, they store implements for him to fuck you up with.
Like, an actual good use of cargo pants. He's using the pockets.
Like, how come John Cena's not hiding lighter fluid and a big flamethrower thingy in his jorts?
This is like, what's that comic book artist who always did all the pouches everyone complains about?
Oh, Rob Liefeld.
Rob Liefeld. Everyone's always like, oh, what is he, what do these guys need all those pouches for? It's like, you need pouches for all kinds of things. Yeah. If you're fighting, you want as many tools at your disposal as possible.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pro pouches, pro pockets, more cargo pants, more pouches, put stuff in them. Storage space is huge.
I don't understand
As somebody who's had to wear a lot of women's clothes for a lot of my life, don't turn your nose up at pockets, assholes.
Yeah,
those are precious.
I don't know why there's not more, like, clothing storage related violence in wrestling. Like, there's you know, classic spots like pulling a pair of brass knuckles or a roll of quarters out from under your dick if you're wearing, like, Speedos or whatever, and then hitting someone with it.
Wow, I never, like, actually made that connection.
Yeah. I don't think that Ric Flair is actually, you know, tucking a roll of quarters under his dick.
Oh, well, that's how I imagined it and decided. It was like, well, Colette's an expert.
Yeah, that's true.
But... she knows. Like, she's worked with wrestlers. Like, that's how they really do it.
Yeah, that's...
like, it just goes right under there. So, yeah.
Well,
I believed you.
In fairness, I worked on indie wrestling, and I don't think that most indie wrestlers could afford to lose a roll of quarters. So, no dick tucking in that. But, like, Finn Balor could hide a roll of quarters in his jock super easy. No one would know.
Yeah.
They'd just be like, did Finn grow another one? That makes sense.
If anyone could figure it out, it's old Fergal. Fucking around with the shark DNA at the performance center. Can you imagine? I bet, I'm sure Vince McMahon would let Finn Balor mess around with shark DNA.
Vince McMahon would love it if a wrestler had two dicks. He would love it so much.
I hate Vince McMahon. He and I have a lot in common.
For sure. Vince McMahon is a very complicated figure in my life where, like, I hate everything he stands for, but he's responsible for most of the things I like.
Damn.
Have you seen the movie Beyond the Mat?
I have it on DVD and still haven't watched it because I'm waiting for the right emotional moment.
There's no right moment for it. But
I'm also haven't listened to the new Fiona Apple for the same reason.
Oh man. I can't help you on that one. But Beyond the Mat is I'm pretty sure that Vince McMahon would love a wrestler with two dicks because there's a scene in that where he is essentially doing a job interview with Darren Drozdov, who's like a former NFL player who was a wrestler until he was paralyzed in the ring. And Darren Drozdov's thing in football was that he could puke on command. So, you know, one of the most famous Vince McMahonisms is him handing Droz a bucket and being like, he's gonna puke, like just go over and over again trying to get him to puke on command in front of a documentary film camera. And I'm pretty sure that if a wrestler walked up to him with two dicks, like he'd do the same thing and be like, let me see him, pal.
Yeah. See, that sounds very intense to me.
Oh.
And I'm a very sensitive person.
Yeah.
So that's why I've been waiting.
I couldn't, like, you couldn't tell me to puke on command. Also, there's like, you know, they're seeing Mick Foley get hit in the head 700 times with a chair. And then there's the documentary camera being like, oh yeah, here's Mick Foley's wife and kids watching him get... whooped with a chair. It's a rough movie, but the Vince McMahon stuff in it is great. Like the only better Vince McMahon appearance in a movie is in the Bret Hart documentary Wrestling with Shadows, where he goes into Bret Hart's locker room after the Montreal Screwjob and the camera doesn't follow, but then Vince McMahon walks out and Bret Hart hit him so hard that he broke a bone, like broke one of Vince McMahon's bones, and Vince looks like he's been like punched to like being three sizes smaller than he actually is. It's the best.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't even know how we got on this tangent.
We were talking about storage.
Oh, yeah. Like, John Cena could carry, like, I don't know, a fork or a spike or something like that. He probably would have won the Firefly Funhouse match if he had fire in his pants.
He could have brought anything.
Yeah.
To that Firefly Funhouse match. And he could have, yeah.
People don't do that enough anymore. Like, that's one of my favorite wrestling tropes is, like, when someone pulls something out of their trunk, like, their trunks or whatever, and then they hit someone with it, that part where they, like, essentially, like, pull the spandex out, like, as far as it goes to, like, tuck the thing back in. It's super great. And Mr. Pogo doesn't even fuck around with that. He's, like, just straight drinking lighter fluid, like, on the job. No one's gonna tell him anything.
It's really... It's, like, some of the best pocket work I've ever seen. I think I can say that confidently.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you're talking about pocket work, you're rating Mr. Pogo against other Mr. Pogo matches.
I mean, I meant across different, like, even outside of wrestling.
I don't know. Like, how many other pocket-related things are there? I feel like most of the time they don't use pockets because they look awkward on camera.
In all of media?
I mean, I'm sure that people put their hands in their pockets, but...
Well, there's, like, the, you know, pulling your... There's things people do with pockets.
I only watch Star Trek, and there's no pockets in Star Trek.
There's no pockets in Star Trek. There's no pockets. Fuck. That sucks.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's a real pain.
There's got to be.
Those little belts.
Yeah. I feel like more people use, like, belt loops in movies than actual pockets. Like, no one's pulling a wallet out of their pocket in a movie. They just magically have money.
I guess the pot, I am thinking of a pocket, and it's not a real pocket, it's a mimed pocket.
I don't think that counts at all. I think Mr. Pogo's at the top of this list. He's 1 through 5. Well, we've spent a lot of time talking about Mr. Pogo, and not a lot of time talking about the, like, the actual, like, visual dramatics of this match. Like you said... earlier that, like, one of the most satisfying things that you've seen in wrestling is, like, the noise that happens, or I guess that you've heard.
No,
is, like,
not in wrestling.
Oh, okay.
In all of life,
someone hitting...
One of the most satisfying things is the barbed wire exploding.
Yeah.
Exploding barbed wire match.
The exploding barbed wire is the most satisfying. For me, the most satisfying visual in this match was all of the wrestlers who fell into the pool doing the dead man's float.
I didn't even notice that.
It's so good. Like, you have to go back and like rewatch this, because there's a couple of guys who do the dead man's float. And I think, like, one of them is Niyama. Like, I think that he does the dead man's float at one point. I think Mike Awesome does the dead man's float at one point. And, like, they just look like they're like going to be in that pool forever. Like, no one is gonna fish him out. Like, in a week, Mike Awesome will be in, like, the filter of the pool. It's pretty great. I also love that, like, Onita doesn't hit the water at all, but ends up wetter than everybody else.
Yeah, because he's the star.
True professional.
When you're the star, you don't have to hit the water, and you get to be the wettest.
Yes. Yeah.
He's like. The amount of, like, just drama that he, like, I was, like, ready to move on. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll sort of pay attention to the ending promo. There's no subtitles. I don't know what he's saying. I was, like, with him. Yeah. He's on the mic at the end. I'm like, uh-huh. Yep.
And then he's, like, saying. Helping his buddies out. And then you get to the back and his friends are, like, practically dead. Yeah, his, like, the post-match stuff that Onita does is pretty commonly referred to as Onita Theater, and it's just as popular as his matches. He has, like, it's so good. He has, like, a very distinct voice. You don't need to understand Japanese to, like, get into the emotions of what he's doing, and he is 100% emotion. Like, he is, I don't know, if someone were to ask him to play it subtle, I think that he'd be incapable. Like, he is the loudest person in the room, even when he's not saying anything. And it's pretty great. Like, there's very few people, I think, who are, like, kind of on his level for, like, physical and vocal charisma. Like, Dusty Rhodes is up there. Like, I think Dusty's my number one, and, like, Onita's, like, definitely very, very high up on that list.
Yeah. I was just, like, so I forgot about there was a third leg of my journey in this match. And that third leg was, I want to be supported. I want to be supported by Onita.
Yeah.
Like that. That's what I want.
So that's,
and like, again, maybe it's, I'm like, you know, quarantine brain. I miss human contact. But just like watching him just being like a good friend.
Yeah. He is a good friend. Helping his
buddies to the back and like tending to their little wounds on the floor and getting them to the ambulance.
Yeah.
Like, I would love that sense of camaraderie.
God. The only thing...
Specifically with Atsushi Onita.
Yeah.
I mean, with any friend, but, like, that would be pretty chill.
Yeah, I would love for Onita to be my friend. The only bad part about that ending is that a lot of times with FMW tapes, like, everyone goes in the ambulance at the end of every tape, that I've seen at least, which is great. Like, what a great convention to bring back every single tape. But usually when, like, as soon as the ambulance doors close, like, this big, like, heavy guitar riff plays, and there's no heavy guitar riff in this match. It's very, like, contemplative. It's very sad. Like, oh no, Onita's friends are hurt. But, like, usually if it's, like, Onita going to the hospital, it's, like, you know, the encore at a rock concert. It's so good.
That's wonderful.
I don't know, it's really like, I feel like the way that we've been talking about this match kind of does a disservice to everyone that's not Onita or Pogo, but like even someone like, you know, Mr. Gaunasuke, who's a really big figure in FMW history, like this is not a showcase for him outside of like him being, you know, sacrificing himself to eliminate Pogo, like with that crossbody. Which, how awesome. That's so good.
Oh my god, yeah, the double, yeah.
Yeah, I love that spot where Gaunasuke, like, hits Pogo with a crossbody off of the platform and into the water. Like, that's, like, real hero shit that also,
yeah,
like, saves a concrete finish between Onita and Pogo for, like, a bigger show. It's great booking. Like, it's so good. I know that, like, for some people who watch FMW, particularly, like, this era, like, the Onita era of it, like, some people who don't get it, like, kind of get annoyed at how Onita-centric everything is, but, like, I don't know, like, Gaunasuke was, I would say, like, probably the number, like, he was the number one heel during, like, the Hayabusa era later on, and he has, you know, a huge number of good matches under his belt, too, and this is, like, kind of part of building him up. You know, he takes out the bad guy, and then Onita,
right,
immediately turns around, chucks Hosaka into the barbed wire, power bombs him, and that's it. Like, the pace picks up at that point.
I feel like it's hard to not do a disservice to this match in talking about it,
mm-hmm,
just because it's like so much of it is the tableau of this match. If that makes,
yeah,
sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I,
like,
mean,
you can't really do it just like, you should, like, listener, if you, even if you can just see the, like, watch the highlight video on YouTube, just watch that. It's great.
Yeah, the point.
Experience this.
Like, the point of this is not the match at all. Like, it's not about work rate, and it's not about moves, and it's, you know, it's barely about cogent storytelling outside of, like, a couple of like I said, with the Gaunasuke and Pogo spot. It's about the spectacle of the thing. Like, hey, we built a giant raft in the middle of a pool and we're going to put a wrestling, yeah, ring on it. And if that's not enough, we're going to blow up stuff. Like, and it's going to be pretty sick because it's on a pool. Y'all in? And if the answer to that question is no, like, then this match isn't for you. And it wouldn't matter, right, who's in it. But it helps that, you know, one of the people in it is one of the most charismatic wrestlers of his generation. And the other one is a dude carrying a sickle.
But I think it speaks very highly to Mr. Pogo.
Yeah.
That he's able to, like, stand out and was able to make as much of an impression on me watching six dudes, one of whom I've seen before, probably,
mm-hmm.
in such a spectacular, distracting match situation that he's still able to, like, be something I can be like, okay, I'm into this specific guy. And yeah, it helps he has a sickle.
Yeah. I mean, he has an amazing vibe.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, it's a spectacle, but, like, we see a lot of big spectacle in wrestling. And there's also, like, some powerful vibes that are indescribable happening in the whole thing for me.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, which is why I can't, I like definitely can't do the match justice in talking about it. Because so much of it is just like, I love experiencing this feeling I have of watching not just the spectacle, but like every like aspect of this bizarre fucking aesthetic.
Yeah. And that is what it is, right? Like it's the aesthetic part of it. Like, I was trying to track down, like, when this match happened, and, like, while I was scrolling through FMWWrestling.us's, like, really comprehensive list of FMW shows, there were countless, like, during the year of 1994, Barbed Wire Street Fight, Barbed Wire Street Fight, Barbed Wire Street Fight, No Ropes Barbed Wire Street Fight, No Ropes Exploding Barbed Wire Street Fight, like, just, like, over yeah. and over and over again, but... Like, if you watch those matches, like, they work. They never stop working. Like, I think it takes a genius to come up with something like this stupid. Like, it's stupid. But to come right. up, like, with something that dumb and not just sell it to people, but make it seem like the smartest thing in the world. Like, a logical extension of professional wrestling is this match where people are getting blown up in a pool. It makes sense and it shouldn't.
Yeah. It's incredibly impressive and like truly commendable that it works.
I wish that they would have fought on a boat. Not just
for the novelty factor. Sorry?
If this were like not to compare things, but like if this were a WWE style cinematic wrestling match, they would have definitely fought on the boats. Like they would have tried to like joust with the barbed wire bats on the boats.
You know, sometimes when you're doing something for the first time, I'm assuming this was the first one of its kind.
The only one.
Okay. You, like, miss things that in hindsight would be obvious.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe, like, it does seem now, yeah, that would have been ideal.
You don't want to give up control, I guess, like, in a wrestling match. And if you're on a unstable boat, and you're not supposed to be the one who gets knocked on their ass into the water. Oh, and I guess if the water is set to explode when you touch it. Oh, damn. This idea went from being really good to being inconsistent with the match.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. I think there should be more boat wrestling.
Yeah. No.
In general?
Boat violence in general.
Boat violence. Yeah. We need more of it. And not like, I'm not talking about stupid, boring shit like war.
Yeah.
And the Navy.
Yeah, or...
I'm talking about professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Boat nonsense.
Like, there wasn't enough boat-related violence on the Jericho cruise.
Oh my god, offensive to me.
Yeah, honestly. Like, oh, we threw MJF into a pool. Like, y'all should have, like, tried to drown him in the soft serve machine's ice cream.
You could have thrown him in a pool at someone's house.
Yeah. You could have, yeah, and, like, seemingly every other wrestler in AEW has a goddamn pool.
People falling into pools is, like, a joy, for yeah. sure.
Oh, man, but they should have, like...
It's 2020, and this pool isn't even exploding?
Yeah, like, y'all what aren't even, like, setting up, like, a chair bridge, but with, like, deck chairs.
Oh, my God.
I want to see someone get powerbombed into a deck chair and have trouble getting out of it.
I'm so pissed. I want this so much.
Yeah, I guess I should take back the part where I said I'm not an expert, because if you show me an environment where wrestling can happen in, I will tell you all of the best possible spots for it. That's one of them.
That's such a skill. That's such an important skill.
Like, where's the moonsault off of the upper deck balcony? People have done moonsaults off of balconies before, but this one's on a damn boat. You know how cool that would be?
If they'd had Kota Ibushi on that cruise, he would have done it.
Oh, he would have done it. Like,
he would have figured out all kinds of good shit.
Yeah.
Because he's dumb as a rock, except for these things.
Yeah, he would have, like...
The only intelligence that matters.
Done a 619 off of, like, the mizzenmast or something. Presuming cruise ships have a mizzenmast. I don't know where those are on a boat.
I actually don't know what that... I heard mast, which I kind of know what that is.
Yeah.
On a boat. So, yeah. I don't know. It's a boat. Yeah. They all have those, right?
They got masts.
You have to have a mast on a boat, unless it's a dinghy.
Or, like, fighting through the cabins.
Yeah.
There's so much to do on a boat in pro wrestling. This is unexplored territory.
Honestly, like, the, after the Okada cruise thing, or maybe it was, maybe it wasn't after the Okada cruise, I think it was after the Jericho cruise, but my Stokely Hathaway tweeting the Stokely Hathaway cruise is just going to be on the Staten Island Ferry, and he's just going to do a Staten Island Ferry Anywhere match or whatever. Like, yeah. I still want to see that.
Yeah, no, I would love to see a match on the Staten Island Ferry.
Yeah. Damn.
I'm sure it's happened. More boat like, wrestling. Two people have definitely fought on the Staten Island Ferry.
Yeah, but not as a wrestling match.
True. It is like better with narrative.
And, like, fights aren't that good to watch.
No.
Mostly.
No.
Like, I'm still learning how to enjoy watching professional fighting.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it seems like it's a project that's going well for you.
It's going pretty well, but Danielle's also helping me a lot and showing me, like, cool, fun stuff.
Yeah.
Most of it's not that cool.
Well, you know, one of the...
I mean, like, MMA is cool, and it's brand new.
Yeah.
Pretty much, to the world of fighting. In the history of fights on the Staten Island Ferry, I don't think there were a lot of, like, cool grappling chokes.
Can you imagine, like, there's just someone giving star ratings to Staten Island Ferry fights? Like, here's a 6-star Staten Island Ferry match. Didn't think anyone was going to take it past 5, but this one had everything. It had right
hooks.
That is
the list pervert I want to meet.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That guy. Oh my god, what a perfect life that would be.
Yeah, just two people start fighting on the Staten Island Ferry and someone pulls out the stopwatch. They gotta get the bell
legal pad and the stopwatch. Just taking notes real fast.
Yeah, those are my favorite people at wrestling shows.
The stopwatch guys?
The stopwatch guys. They're always there. Have you ever seen one?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh yeah, I'm sure that like... You go to
a PWG show.
Yeah, I was going to say, you go to PWG shows, so, like, they don't even need a stopwatch. Just say, like, 20 minutes, 21 seconds every match, and that's probably close enough.
There's also stopwatch guys, though.
Yeah. Well, they got to make sure that it's not 20 minutes, 24 seconds.
Oh, no, I mean, like, stopwatch fans. There's a stopwatch. There are stopwatch guys who like work for the wrestling.
No. Like they're just hobbyists who like have a stopwatch so that they can take exact like ring time.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was talking about too. Just making sure.
I mean, PWG matches are all 20 minutes long though.
Yeah.
Like some of them should be 5. Some of them should be 12. All of them are at least 20.
Yeah, they're. I mean,
I wouldn't even start the stopwatch until 20 minutes.
There's a guy. There's definitely one guy who always has a stopwatch, and I think he's the timekeeper and updates the databases.
I mean, if he's the official PWG.
No, he's not the official timekeeper.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he might be now, but whatever.
They just saw him in the crowd with a stopwatch. This is our fucking
guy.
Hey,
you, kid!
Excalibur.
You got something! It's a stopwatch! One, we forgot it. It's in Super Dragon's other car, along with his CDs that aren't Appetite for Destruction. That's like a fun PWG thing. They own like, I think maybe they found another CD, but for a while they were only playing Appetite for Destruction before the show,
yeah.
At intermission, and then after the show, which is kind of okay. It's like it's a great album.
Did they get through the whole thing?
Well, on a weekend. on like Ebola, for example, like the 3-night tournament,
mm-hmm.
where you're there 3 days in a row, you do get through it. And then they do start it over again.
Yeah.
And you are listening to Night Train, night 3, for you don't know how many times it's been.
Oh, even better would be My Michelle. Like, My Michelle has, like, the best opening line in, like, any song. It's so good. Like, where Axl Rose just, like, rips and goes, "Your daddy waxing porno." Like, that shit rules. It's so good.
I was thinking of Night Train specifically because at a show, I was standing at the bar waiting for my drink, and some guy I thought was talking to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Oh, what? Sorry, I can't hear you," because it was loud. He leaned forward and started singing along with Night Train even louder. And I realized he was just singing along to Night Train. And I really thought he was trying to have a conversation with me. And it was very embarrassing for me, a person with terrible social anxiety, who usually has to be very high to go to those shows. So.
That is a really good PWG story, though. I am also very sorry for singing them.
Don't be sorry. I'm from LA. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been to the Whiskey A Go-Go. You know what's up.
Have I been to the Whiskey A Go-Go?
Probably not.
No, I haven't. I've been to the Roxy.
Oh.
That's such a shitty part of town to hang out in. I hate that area.
Yeah. Is it shitty for, like, is that where Skid Row is?
No.
No?
It's, like, super, like, okay. This area is, like, the westernmost part of West Hollywood, where West Hollywood borders with Beverly Hills. That's where the Whiskey A Go-Go is.
Okay.
It's super fancy.
Oh, every story about hair metal lied to me.
Every story about hair metal was lying to you. Yes, that is an incredibly expensive part of town. Right above, like, it's right next to the hills. Like, super, super rich people live there.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, at least in the 2000s, it was just people doing, like, 80s rock and roll lifestyle cosplay all the time. Mm-hmm. They're just LARPing. And so there were, like, 80s throwback hair metal, like, concerts to go to, like cover bands and stuff. I don't know. It's a bad vibe though.
Oh yeah, no. I would never go.
It's a real bad vibe. Yeah. You could play, like, with the Whiskey Go-Go, at least when I was in high school, was like a pay-to-play place. Where, like, if you were a band, you had enough money, you could play there.
Mm.
Same with the Roxy. So those are all terrible. Bad vibe. Like, people dressing like Johnny Depp and doing a lot of cocaine.
Yeah, that is a bad vibe. Yeah. That's one of the worst possible vibes.
It really is. But we do have incredible civic pride in Guns N' Roses. Which makes sense because they are, you know, some good tunes.
Yeah, I mean,
so I will never object to having Guns N' Roses sung to me.
Yeah, Appetite for Destruction is one of the all-time, like, meathead anthems. I love it. It's one of my favorite albums.
It's a great album.
Yeah.
No disrespect here. No disrespect to Appetite for Destruction. No disrespect to Stopwatch Perverts. the guy at the on the Staten Island Ferry, you know, cataloging fights. Nothing but respect to you. I'm pointing at my microphone and realizing it's not picking up, but I'm just, like, emphasizing, if you exist, you are the coolest. Yeah.
That's a good scene project.
The Staten Island Ferry fight catalog?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That actually is a really good scene project.
Yeah. A lot of rides on the ferry, but totally worth it.
Yeah. Damn, I think we've got, like, we accomplished some good stuff here today.
Yeah, I think so too. God, I love this match. Yeah.
Sorry for digressing so much though and telling you about my the dumbest parts of town. This match is amazing.
Yeah, it's super good.
Yeah. It's very easily, it's fairly easily accessed. So if you're listening, you should watch it.
You totally should. And yet since you can't get it, you know, all the way on YouTube, it still has the allure of something that you have to work towards acquiring.
Which is nice. And having, I don't know, I just love a year promotion match titled completetape.mp4. Just has a good vibe.
Yeah, that does feel pretty good.
I would love to be able to, like, it would have been really good to watch this on VHS, though.
Yeah.
Like, in, I don't know. Like, this stuff was all, like, super influential on...
Oh, massively.
U.S. dipshit wrestling, right?
Yeah, ECW stole from it. I dipshit again,
nothing but respect for the dipshits of the United States.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. ECW stole from it, and both WCW and WWE stole from ECW, so...
Okay.
In essence, like, some of the stuff from FMW is of... Like, the, like, I don't know, it's hard to kind of put into context how influential FMW is, but it's a massively influential promotion. Its two main stars are two of the most beloved, you know, figures in the history of Japanese wrestling.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I don't know if this is, like, peak Onita or not. It might be. It's pretty close. But, you know, it's definitely, like, the kind of thing where, like, if you've never seen him before and don't get the hype, it's worth watching, you know, either something super goofy like this or, you know, just a regular exploding ring death match. You know, the word regular being a strange adjective there. And you should get it right away. Like, he is impossible to turn your eyes away from.
I mean, I have never before, like, wanted to commission a painting of a wrestler as George Washington crossing the Delaware. So, I don't know. That's got to say something, right?
Yeah, no, it totally does.
Oh, sorry. I hear your dog sounds.
Yeah, he just came in from a walk. But yeah, no, that's what I have for this match. It's great and you should watch it, and you know, you should definitely stick around for the end where Onita contemplates the horrible violence of his life. It's good stuff.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm back to thinking about how much I want more water violence and explosions and boat matches.
Pocket violence.
If you're a wrestling person, you should listen to these ideas.
Yeah.
And then hire Colette to think for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Nick Gage needs to get into pocket violence.
He's got tons of pockets.
So many pockets.
That does it for us this time. If you liked this, please rate and review the show on whatever you're listening to it on. It helps. We love it. Thank you. You don't need to, like, give a real review. You can just say, good, or... boats.
Yeah.
Something like that, but five stars.
If,
like,
one of you leaves a thing that says boats.
That'd be great. Please do that. If you have questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, I mean, don't. Please don't. But if you do, you can email them to podcasts@fanbyte.com. Put Fanbyte's VCR in the subject, and hopefully it'll get forwarded to me and we'll read it. Maybe we'll read it on the show. I don't know. This is episode 2. It's all up in the air. Write us a really good email. You could inspire a whole new segment.
Yeah.
And that would be your claim to fame forever. You can read all of our... Don't laugh. It's a very prestigious claim to fame. You can read all of our wrestling coverage at fanbyte.com/wrestling, which is Fanbyte with a Y. Most of that is really, really good. I did a...
Most of that?
Yeah, because some of it I wrote and it's not very good. So don't read my AEW recaps. They fucking suck.
This is amazing.
Everything
this is like,
else is great.
If a wrestler were like, most of the time I win my matches, but this time I'm not so sure.
Yeah, pretty much. But we do have really good wrestling coverage. Lots of good articles. Colette has a weekly column. There's tons of good free features that have come out like just this month. I did a whole thread about it on Twitter. Felt all proud of myself for putting together a site that I enjoy reading and am proud of. You would enjoy reading it too and be proud of me. Or not my writing, but maybe my compilation of other people's writing. Check out the other shows on this feed. I do another show with Danielle Riendo called Fan Fight, where we watch MMA and pro wrestling. This week, spoiler alert, we're watching Pancras. I'm really excited. There's also Sports Middle, where they talk about sports. There's other shows on other Fan Bite feeds. There's a show about movies. Video games. I don't know. It's great. So check it all out. Colette, where can people find you?
Y'all can find me on Twitter at Colette Arand. C-O-L-E-T-T-E-A-R-R-A-N-D.
Cool. You can find me also on Twitter, probably talking around, but not about, the Chinese drama I just finished called The Untamed. Not going to talk about it, though. At Hunk Tears. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.